Welcome to the China Business Law Podcast, a show about the practice of law in China from real in-house and law firm professionals on the ground.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the China Business Law Podcast. I'm your host, Art Dicker, and today I'm joined by Nicholas Bamanyar. Nicholas, or Nico, as I know him, is at Leaf, which is a law firm predominantly based in China and just recently opened an office in Paris as well. Hi, Nico. How's it going?
Hi, Art. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you. And, you know, I know you're an expert in particular on data privacy law and particularly in China. And, you know, a lot of companies, and what we're going to get into is the main topic for today. A lot of international companies, I think, you know, feel a bit overwhelmed and feel it's a bit daunting to comply with all of these new regulations that are coming out here in China on data privacy. I think you've suggested when we've talked before that it doesn't have to be that complicated. And so I've got some good news to tell people ahead of time that this is hopefully going to be a very inspiring podcast, that data privacy law is something that folks out there can wrap their heads around. So I thought we'd get into it first just with sort of an introduction 101. You know, we've seen a lot of new laws come out regarding data privacy in China recently. Can you give our audience a sense of what the landscape looks like right now with some of the regulations out there?
Sure. So especially for people coming from either the US or even better from the EU, where they're used to GDPR, which is a big, massive text covering pretty much everything on personal information, China is very different in a sense that you have one overarching text, the cybersecurity law, which is only giving really a direction. And in a very Chinese way, you will have one law setting that direction, but not a lot of technical detail to implement and to deploy that law. So what is happening is that in you know, the next 5 to 7 years following that first law, a lot of regulation, measures, guideline will be issued. So with that law being very empty, it can be daunting for a newcomer in China to find answers to data privacy. And it comes essentially to navigating those very complex and numerous laws and regulation under that cybersecurity law.
And that's not necessarily unique to the cybersecurity law. And as you know, like recently China's new foreign investment law came out and is also very lacking on a lot of specifics. I think that tends to be the way that regulations are made in China. They start out quite general, and then over time the details tend to get filled in. But we tend to have seen some other regulations, I think, come out recently as well, in addition to the cybersecurity law.
Yeah, and you know, thank God for that, because when the cybersecurity law came out, it was so shallow in a sense, in terms of technical detail, that it was actually relying on a very old glossary from 1999. So a lot of the terms were actually completely empty from a legal point of view. So we had to wait for lower ranked regulation to explain what is actually the substance in that law. What do you mean by personal data? What do you mean by network operator? For the longest time, we didn't know what was a network operator or critical information. So that was very, very difficult to just understand before actually understanding what was the obligation. The very first exercise for any legal advisor or lawyers to look at a law is to understand the terms, and that was the first major difficulty. And the second difficulty is that, as opposed to the EU, for example, where you have one regulator, China is a little bit different in a sense that you will have different central authorities. So you will have the Cyberspace Administration of China competing with the MIT, so the Ministry of Industry and Information Technology, competing with the PSB, the Public Security Bureau, and so on and so on. And then, so this is at central level, you will also have local authorities. So the different layers will not only compete, but also sometimes contradict each other when they will issue regulation. So even when you think that you have the answer to a specific problem reading a regulation, you might want to take this with a little bit grain of salt to assess if this is coming from a local authority or central authorities, and which is actually the highest ranked one.
Yeah, that's also something which we don't see quite as much in like you said, the EU and from and my experience in the US. It's generally one regulator is given a clear mandate to govern a certain domain issue like this. But in China, that happens a lot. Going back to examples, when audiovisual streaming technology came out in China, there were all Ministry of Culture and MIIT and SARFT and all of these agencies were trying to almost grab territory grab on the regulatory space. And so in some ways, I guess the what we're seeing on data privacy law and the cybersecurity law is comforting in the sense that it's following some similar patterns that we're seeing about how China regulations are made and put into practice. How about if companies are, recently already had to, enhance their global policies for, GDPR and so forth? How much kind of adaptation do you see companies having to make when they're specifically trying to localize their policies for China?
The first hurdle to overcome is to actually shift the mindset. From the legal department of a company coming to China to revisit their definition. What they think they know in Chinese legal landscape can change. This will be a first shift. And the other one is to look at a broader scope. Yes, you will treat personal information in maybe similar ways if you have a comprehensive policies, but you might actually handle information that was not regulated outside China, but suddenly becomes regulated in China. So you will also expand your scope of view.
Got it. Okay. Well, still, I think maybe, and this is maybe not unique to China, but we see global multinational companies probably being able to adapt to the China local rules with relative ease. I mean, they're used to having localized policies and so forth. And building extensive and sometimes expensive compliance programs. How about if we get into the issue of smaller companies, SMEs out there who don't necessarily even maybe have a big operation in China, but still they're aware that the cybersecurity law is out there. They read a lot of client alerts about it, but still maybe not able to wrap their head around what they actually need to do. And is there sort of a shortcut or sort of a minimalist approach that a company can a policy can company can put together for their policy that gets them most of the way there and is also not necessarily overwhelmingly expensive and time consuming?
Yes, so actually the size of the business if it's an SME or an MNC, doesn't really matter in data privacy world. What matters is how much regulated information they're handling. You can have an MNC not handling a lot of regulated data, but you can have an SME handling a lot of regulated data, whether it's personal information or critical information. So the best way to understand how much you need to put in terms of resource, in terms of time and money, into becoming compliant in China with the data privacy law is to understand exactly what regulated data you have. And this starts with a very simple exercise of a data inventory, simply to understand what do you have in-house. If it's if your business is actually a data-driven business or not, if you are handling a lot of data and what data it is, if it's personal information, how do you handle this personal information? Is it actually personal information that you're handling simply because you have employee and so it's staff personal information? Or it's actually your business is actually built on personal information because, for example, you are an advertising company. So you can have just a couple of people in China, but still handling millions of people personal information. So this is the first step to understand exactly what you're handling. And this is not a 100% a legal exercise. So you can do this in-house. A tech person can go through all the data that flows in and out. And I'm not going to use any collecting or processing terms right now because this is legal terms. I really want to use a very simple definition of data inventory, which is just observing exactly what's going on in terms of data in your company. So the data inventory is a static view at all the information that flows in your company. And you can have a more dynamic view also of those data flow with the data flow diagram. So there you will map essentially what goes where. So you have I don't know if you're familiar with the Gedanke experiment from Einstein. So he was thinking about how to understand a particle of light, a photon, and he thought about an experiment in his head about riding a particle. So he was literally sitting on a particle in his mind to understand what was going on. And the best way to understand what is going on in terms of data flow is to do exactly the same. You take a packet of data that you collect yourself, that you process, that you buy, that you share, and you follow it through your company. And it will reveal amazing things. It will reveal where you acquire your data, if it's in China, if it's in another jurisdiction. You will also discover which SaaS, which third-party product you're using and where they are located and if that makes a difference or not. And you will follow essentially the life cycle of a data packet.
It's also not necessarily, I think, rocket science in the sense of, you're right, you can generally ignore some of the legal terms, which if you think about them too much can get confusing. A lot of it is common sense, and personal information is, what is personal information? Well, it's something that identifies a person, right? I mean, it's not overly complicated or outside of the box. And then what if I'm processing that information, what is that? Well, am I doing something? Right? Am I trying to draw value from it somehow? And if I'm handling or processing that information, okay, do I have consent to get from the person that gave me that information to do the things that I'm doing? And a lot of these policies that I've seen, you know, they are very boilerplate. And that's generally, correct me if I'm wrong, that's fine. I mean, you know, as long as you are giving people notice and getting their consent, electronic consent is easy to do these days on a website or whatnot, click through. And you're you can actually, I think, craft the policy and the terms and conditions quite broadly. So correct me if I'm wrong, it doesn't have to be an overly, even when once you get out of the exercise of the inventory, as you say, even coming up with a policy that gets you most of the way there as far as covering your potential liability and compliance also doesn't necessarily have to be an overly complicated exercise. Am I right to say that?
Yeah, totally. Actually, once you have a clear picture of how you collect the information, then you know exactly how you should inform the user. So informing the user is the first step before obtaining the consent. But because you know that you will collect the information for a specific purpose and you will share the information or not to a third party, and you also know how long you will retain this information internally and when you will destroy it, then publishing this to a user, informing the user about the data lifecycle becomes very, very clear and very simple. So it doesn't have to be a complicated document. It's more a summary of the data inventory and the data flow diagram, essentially explaining your data lifecycles to a first-time customer, I want to say, somebody who's never been into your company, doesn't know your business, wants to understand in a very, very short time, in 10 seconds or less, what is going on with data in your company. That's essentially a privacy notice.
Now we've at the risk of making this sound overly simplified and easier said than done, and we don't want to give our listeners a false sense of security either. Maybe it's time we start to scare them a bit too. there's been a lot of high profile data breaches, data security breaches. You've actually, and your firm has written a great article about that, listing some of the most high profile and recent cases. Equifax, British Airways, Marriott, yeah. Target. This is the list. Some of the more scandalous ones, like Ashley Madison. Mm-hmm. And so, my question, I guess, is, you know, on the one hand, the policy seems easy enough to put together. Where do things break down?
We know that the human factor is definitely the weakest link. We know that at some point you will have staff in the company clicking on the wrong link or downloading the wrong attachment. What any company needs is some strong enough policies to stop the effect of that behavior. I don't want to be very reductive, but you cannot trust 100% your staff to keep your information safe. You need process to add a layer of security. And if you don't do this, you will have a breach that is bigger than it needs to be. If you have a breach, and when I say a breach, it doesn't have to be a hacker. It can be simply someone sending the wrong email to the wrong person, or it can be someone losing a laptop on a business trip. But making sure that the information that have been lost are very quickly contained because you've identified the incident, because you've secured the device that has been lost, or because you have informed the people both internally and externally, that there was an incident, then you can stop the effect of that incident. And it can just stay a very small incident if you have the right policy. So having the right people internally mobilized as soon as you have an incident is absolutely key to stop the effects. And I'm going to expand a little bit on the Chinese angle, where, I mean, you've been here long enough to know that the relationship to risk is very different than the one we have in Europe or in the US. I mean, you know, you can drive here pretty much on your phone, way above the speed limit and not wearing a seatbelt. If you don't have an accident, it's fine.
Right.
And if you do have an accident, well, it's bad luck. So you will need to treat risk a little bit differently when you talk about data protection in China. And there will be a little bit more training on the concept of risk and the concept of near miss incident. So it's not because, for example, an employee receive a suspicious email, this should be treated as a near miss, and this should be flagged, and you should have some sort of process to relay the information back to the response team to simply be aware that there was a fraudulent email and something needs to be done, for example, on the on the spam filter to improve security. So this is a little bit more dangerous here in China, because the concept of risk is very different than we have in the West.
Yeah, and at the risk of, we don't of course want to come across as being what's the right word, culturally snobby or culturally a sense of cultural superiority, but I think it is fair to say that, you know, in China, the expectations on privacy, on data privacy, are different for historical reasons, or we can get into a lot of the reasons. But I don't think we're I think that's, most people would agree with that, and that's just a historically perhaps the way it's been, and that's not unique to China either. You know, other countries as well. Different countries and different cultures have different privacy expectations based on their experience. And so you're right. I can see that for China, you do need maybe different training levels and different kinds of training for staff, and other countries as well. And one of the things I think is, you know, just some of the lists of companies that have had major data security breaches, you kind of have to, and again, they don't necessarily happen in China, right? They happen in the US or wherever. Mm-hmm. And you have to wonder, you know, some ways, like a company that's a truly global company, you think, how could they ever let this happen, right? You know, S&P 500 or, you know, Fortune 500 company, you would think would have a great system to manage, but you hit it right on the head, which is, the weakest link is sometimes people, right? Human error is always there, whether it's a small company or a big company. And in some ways, having worked in large multinational companies before, technology companies, I know that, you know, the issue of ownership over policies, process, and being accountable for things is actually quite difficult sometimes in multinational companies. It's kind of the opposite of what we talked about earlier, where in China you had different regulators fighting over who gets to have the mandate over data privacy policies. In multinational companies, actually sometimes the opposite is true, which is that nobody wants the ownership
exactly
of policy. And that's where I imagine a lot of the breakdown can happen for, even at some of these, ironically at some of these bigger companies where responsibility is more dispersed.
So yes, it's actually more true with data privacy, because as soon as we raise the topic in a company, everybody's going to look at IT. And then IT, because they don't understand a lot about the regulation, simply because they don't have the language for this, is going to turn back to legal. And then legal, it doesn't really know what to do about this. So suddenly you have this data privacy topic becoming a hot potato that nobody wants.
Exactly.
And so you have obviously a problem on accountability, because nobody wants to take care of this. But at a very operational level, you don't have a lot of budget for this. Simply because, first of all, no department really wants it. And also, it doesn't really create value at the moment, at least. So that's a big problem in data privacy. How do you actually justify the costs as a department, if you're IT, if you're legal, if you're finance? So you have those departments only perceiving data privacy as a cost center. Nobody sees data privacy as an investment that's going to yield revenue. Data privacy is not as sexy as a marketing campaign, as working on the new design for a product. A lot of the companies don't see compliance as something that will give them more user or more customers. But more and more, and this is still a very slow trend, but it's definitely a trend, an emerging trend. People are actually putting data privacy as a strength, as a part of their value proposition. And this becomes especially true with companies targeting fairly young user. So I want to say millennials or Generation Z. Because there is a very strong attachment to personal information and to owning their data. So with a little bit older generation, it's less of a problem. But I see more and more companies, and I've seen companies, for example, in New Zealand, putting this forward. And it's very interesting because New Zealand has been perceived as a little bit of a petri dish when it comes to new features. I mean, big companies, big social media always push their new features back in New Zealand to see how it does. So despite being a small country, it's actually a very interesting petri dish to look for trends. This is where you see companies actually putting forward data privacy as part of their value proposition. But more and more, I think that the Chinese customer is going to become more demanding on having their personal information being protected. And this is actually, I think, going to be the next big trend in China. So doing business the old-fashioned way, where you can just collect any information and share any information with whoever, is not going to work for a very long time. That's going to be not only market-driven, but also it's going to be driven by very, very strong sanctions. And because, you know, unfortunately, the legal world is a scary world. There are very strong sections in China, way stronger than in the EU, for example. For example, a DPO, a data protection officer in the EU, cannot be sanctioned, cannot go to jail, cannot be demoted or fired because there was some data breach. It's in the GDPR. However, in China, you have personal liability when a network operator fails to respect the obligation, related to data privacy or data protection. What does that mean? It's simply if a company has a breach, not only the legal rep, the legal representative of the company can pay a fine, but the person in charge of network security and data protection can also go to jail.
Yeah.
Can also be banned for life to hold a position in this industry. So the consequence of a violation of the data privacy laws here in China are much heavier. And when you come back to those company arriving in China and thinking that they know data privacy because of GDPR, for example, they actually need to understand that they don't know that much simply because the rules here are very, very different and everything has a different meaning, especially at the sanction level.
Yeah, that's quite sobering for people to wrap their heads around. I mean, that's because obviously responsibility is hard to pin on someone, but someone like the legal rep or the highest person in charge of the policy is certainly going to be the first person that people look at. And I'm not sure that's why people don't always want to be the legal rep, right, of a company in China. It's not a sought after position necessarily. One of the things I thought we should at least get a quick take from you on was because we're recording this during the coronavirus situation, which has been going on for a few weeks now in China and now outside of China. Do you see an impact, if any, on data privacy, on maybe data collection?
Regarding data privacy specifically, it still needs to be addressed as a crisis. And you can look at it as a fantastic opportunity to assess your level of preparedness when it comes to a crisis. And that will, for example, affect your access to data. If, for example, your office is completely closed, can you still access to your data? Do you have those essential backups that we call golden disk? It's essentially the vital information for your company to continue business. If, let's say, your office is closed, or worst case scenario, a building goes into flame and everything is lost. So the coronavirus is a good opportunity to look at how ready you are to face a crisis. And it's also a fantastic opportunity to work on anything data related, because data should be pretty much available whether you're at the office or not. And I think it's a great time to look into it.
And to your earlier point, and to your earlier point about companies wanting to get a little more automated and take the human element in the risk of human error more and more out of the equation, this is a perfect testing ground for that, because where people are dispersed and people are not able to come into the office, this you can actually see where, if any, your process may have the potential to break down. So in that sense, this is like you said, this is an opportunity for that kind of an assessment and maybe to improve and get your systems more automated. Well, Nico, I want to thank you so much. You know, this has really been a great for our audience. I'm sure you're going to get quite a lot out of this. You know, it's a topic I said at the beginning where it's can seem a little bit daunting, and people hear a lot of horror stories, and it's, you know, there's a lot of confusion about language and technical terms and you know, legal department versus the IT department not wanting to take ownership, all the things we've talked about. But I think you've done a great job of breaking it down for people and explaining it in a way that they can understand, and it's not necessarily an overwhelming challenge, and so I think you know, people will really appreciate all the knowledge you've given them on this episode. So thanks so much for coming on the show.
Well, thank you all for having me, and it was really my pleasure to give a glimpse on data privacy in China. It is not as complicated as it look when you take everything brick by brick in a very engineering way. So I hope that people will get a better understanding of what it means to be compliant with data privacy regulation in China or actually in the rest of the world.
And how rare is that for lawyers to actually say something is not that complicated to their clients,
very
or potential
rare.
Clients or friends or listeners. So, well, one last housekeeping thing. How can people, what's the best way for people to reach out to you? You know, like we'll take the show and we'll put it out on different podcast networks.
Yeah.
And I'll put notes up there. On LinkedIn as well, I'll tag you. But how do you generally like to be contacted? Is LinkedIn a good way to people to reach out to you?
Yeah, LinkedIn is actually great. Yeah.
Oh, so you're active on LinkedIn, so people can ping you there. Perfect.
Yeah.
Well, thanks again, Nico, for joining, and so happy
My pleasure.
You could come on. Yeah. Well, that's a wrap.
Thank you.